Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your automotive questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, auto body, and towing facility, as well as used cars. We welcome your calls about cars right now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Don't mind me. I'll make it through the program. Gordon Fricke carries a load from here on in. 800-348-2551 if you have a car question. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get going with your calls right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program every month or so to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the auto repair and service industry for more than 30 years and is always a hugely popular guest on this program, so I earnestly suggest you call early if you have a question about your car or truck. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be back.
You mentioned something. I said, well, the weather's getting warm, and you said, yeah, it might be time for the snow tires to come off now.
Still a lot of people with snow tires on.
Amazing.
The spring, winter dragged so deeply into spring. It stayed cold. It snowed a bunch of different times, and I'm guilty myself. I still have some family members with snow tires still on, and so we got to get those off.
Did you tell me before the program started that they go soft quickly?
Well, no, the hot weather wears winter tires out very quickly.
Why?
The rubber compound in the tread is very soft and pliable. So when the temperature gets cold, the tire can still stay gooey and get a grip.
Yeah.
When it gets warmer, and road temperatures now with the sun angle the way it is can be hitting 100 degrees pretty soon.
Yeah.
And it really beats up the tire tread. So winter or / snow tires will wear very fast throughout the summer.
I never knew that.
Yeah, so they should come off.
And is it a myth that it will affect your gas mileage quite a bit if you leave them on?
They are a little bit more difficult to turn. They have higher rolling resistance, so absolutely they will decrease your gas mileage.
Well, good time to get them off is now. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We go over to Ray in Gloversville. Ray, you're first.
Yeah, hi, Gordon. I have a question on my 06 Pilot. You looked at it in 16 for rusted out brake lines. And after that, I've had two more times when I've had to be towed in. One was for the alternator, one was for the starter. And with 138,000 on a 06 car, is it wearing out? I would like to get some input from you on how to tell when a vehicle's worn out. And it just, you know, continually breaks down. Oh, and I also had a new radiator put in a couple of months ago.
What you're experiencing, Ray, on that Pilot is not typical of that vehicle. We service quite a few Pilots and other Honda models, and some of these things I do see to some degree. We've changed a starter here and there. The corrosion on the brake lines has a lot to do with the environment, the salt, and a lot of sitting around maybe. But you've had more things go wrong than I normally see at that stage of the vehicle's life, because I really tout these as being very durable, long-life vehicles. I just jump-started one this morning, same year as yours, 164,000 miles, I believe, on it. It's a car we service regularly, and it's holding up remarkably well. So that being said, I don't know if you're going to keep experiencing these nickels and dimes. And if you're getting tired of doing this, maybe it's time to get another vehicle. I don't see big failures of these. I wouldn't tell you, hey, look, the transmission's probably going to go in the next month, because they all do that, because they don't.
Right, and I've tried to be very careful on the maintenance, you know, with VTM fluid and transmission. You know, I've made special care to have it 100% transmission fluid. So the car lived in Ithaca, and between Ithaca and Elmira in a very snowy area.
Yeah.
And I purchased it as a Honda certified. I did notice rust, a little bit of rust underneath when I purchased it at 60,000 miles. But, you know, living in Ithaca and Rochester and then now in Fulton County, it's been well salted. So maybe that's, you know, helping.
We've talked
it wear out.
We get this question a lot, and one of the biggest factors in this part of the country, I find, is salt corrosion raising big problems under the vehicle.
Yeah.
You already had the brake line issue. There are subframes and control arms and different things under there. So definitely that vehicle's got a pretty nasty head start in the rust department.
Yeah.
Right. Now, if we're looking at a replacement, I looked at some of the auto auction places, and they have a grading system from rough up to five. What does that look at? Is it just the cosmetics? But does it have anything to do with the mechanicals?
You know, I'm not sure.
If a car's like a 4.2,
I think it
says clean, but is that just the appearance?
I think a lot of that is appearance of paint interior body, scratches, nicks, things like that. I don't think it goes under the vehicle and rates the condition of the chassis and the lines for rust and corrosion. So, yeah, you're probably right. It's probably more of a visual thing.
Ray, thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop. Gordon Fricke is here to answer your automotive questions today. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Jim in East Bern. Jim, you're on.
Hello. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm calling, and I'm hoping a gentleman who was in the previous show was listening. He described his problem with a 2009 Toyota Tacoma that shuddered between 25 and 30 miles an hour. You guys remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, I have a 2009 Toyota Tacoma. I bought it in 2011, and for 7 years, I put up with that shuddering.
Yeah.
Nobody could tell me what it was. Well, this past March, the snowstorms killed my transmission, so I had to buy a new transmission. And guess what?
Shudder's
gone.
Shuddering
was gone. So I hope that gentleman's listening. If he doesn't mind the shutter, you can get along with it. Otherwise, they can have their transmission replaced.
Oh.
That's an expensive replacement.
Yeah, I think I'd go with the shuttering.
Yeah.
I got a used one for $2,000 installed. It wasn't too hard to take.
Okay.
And I needed a truck and solve the shuttering, so I feel pretty good about it.
Great.
All right, Jim. Hey, thanks a lot for that info. 800-348-2551, the number. It is Vox Pop, and Anthony in Saratoga is on. Anthony.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going, guys?
You know, it is.
I've got a 2007 Toyota Tacoma, and I also was experiencing a shake when I was driving, and it continued to get worse to the point where it was violent. I brought the truck in to get looked at, and my mechanic said that I have 11-ply tires for a heavy-duty truck when I should have 4-ply tires. So he rotated the tires. He said eventually it's going to start happening again, and now it has started happening again. But he said nothing, no damage would be caused to the truck. So I was just calling to find out if I should be concerned about doing damage.
So what you're experiencing is a shimmying or a shaking?
Yeah.
Did it shake the steering wheel? Is that what you were having happen?
Yep, the steering wheel.
Yeah. So what's going on there is you're experiencing poor or abnormal tire wear. Reaches a point where the balance is out and it's shaking the wheel. So your guy rotated them, probably balanced them, and now the badly worn tires are apparently on the back, so you're not feeling it. It's really not 100% the fault of the ply rating, although a Tacoma, did you say it was a Tacoma?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, that does not need a 10-ply tire. That would be a load range E. They make them in your size, and if you're pulling big loads or towing a lot, it could be beneficial, but you should go back to the standard load on the truck. It'll make it ride smoother, and it doesn't need that heavy of a tire. So it's not just the ply rating. I think it's the way it wore and caused the shake is what's the concern. So it might need an alignment when you get some tires, you know?
Right. Well, he checked the alignment, said the alignment was good.
Yep.
Should I go back to the garage that sold me the tires and...
If they're really 10-ply and they didn't tell you we're selling you 10-ply tires, it's a little unnecessary for such a light truck, you know. Did you indicate you wanted a heavy tire?
No.
No. Now, 10-plies, if it is really a 10-ply or a load range E, it's really pretty stiff, sturdy tire for a Tacoma. It's not going to hurt the truck. You can certainly use them.
All right. Well, thanks.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. We appreciate the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest today on Vox Pop at our number, 800-348-2551. Rich in Perth. Rich, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure,
I have a 2011 Toyota FJ Cruiser, and in the owner's manual, I haven't seen any reference to transmission service. I'm wondering if they just don't service this transmission, or should I be thinking about changing the oil in it?
Yeah. In some cases now, we're seeing non-service requirement on the transmission fluid, which is true in one sense. If the vehicle's driven very mildly, like the normal service part of the manual, but up here, this part of the country, we fall into the severe use in a lot of cases because of the temperature changes and the climate and driving through snow and all that.
Okay.
If your manual shows you a severe duty section or hard use, follow that. And it may then talk about a transmission fluid, because Toyota previously always had in their pickups drain and refill intervals. And I don't think the FJ has anything different than the pickups do in terms of transmission and fluid requirements. So I would say, yes, it would be a good idea to do drain and refill at the right interval. See if you can find out more in your manual as to what it says in there. Or you could call a dealer and say, under more than, higher than normal use, do they recommend it? But sometimes the dealer's only going by what you've got in your book there, you know?
Yeah, I've looked at the book under hard use, and even there I've seen nothing on transmission service. But, I would like to have it done. I'm sure the dealer will sell me anything I'll ask for, but I thought I'd double check with you.
Yeah, I'm all for doing that at the right intervals and doing it on time instead of waiting till the fluid's filthy and bad, you know?
All right, Rich, thanks a lot. We'll take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number on Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Identity Eyewear Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY Eyewear Albany.com. 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonally inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats. Local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine, 20railroad.com. Colby Attorney's Service, Corporate Formations, Document Retrieval Services, Court Filings, and Legal Publishing for the legal and professional community. Since 1939, ColbyService.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. And from personal wine cellar Glenville, family-owned business since 2011, offering a selection of wines, spirits, and libations, home of the cellar dweller, monthly scotch and bourbon tastings, home delivery available, 518-399-9463.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551. And Gordon Fricke is our guest. Gordon, a couple of quick emails here and then back to the loaded phone lines. This one's from Larry in Adams, Mass. What is your opinion on leaving cars idling? I generally shut off a car if gone over 10 seconds, but I see people leaving cars idling 10, 20, 30 minutes at a time. Just wondering the balance of what is good and bad for the car and for the environment.
Yeah, it's a good question. So cold weather, zero out, 10 above, a lot of people have auto starters.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of cars have them are built, programmed in already. They're a factory system. They have now limited them to 5 minutes. So if you want your car warmer than that, you have to restart it. And it has a lot to do with idling, pollution, deposits in the oil, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not the best thing to leave your car idling long periods of time. The engine doesn't like it. The environment doesn't like it. It uses more gas. So,
yeah,
I guess limiting the idle time is probably a good idea.
All right. And this one is from Mark. Is there any danger to driving around with bleeding struts, or is it just a matter of driving with the discomfort of a rough ride?
No, it can be dangerous because struts are such a important and integral link in the suspension. Mm. It's more than just a shock absorber. A strut acts as a suspension part that holds the wheel in.
Yeah.
And when they lose their oil, they will lose the ability to control the bouncing, and the car will, or the truck, whatever it happens to be, will become unstable.
Mm.
And it can. I have driven vehicles with struts that are absolutely, you know, gone.
Yeah.
And it can be a nasty, dangerous ride.
Okay.
So, you know, for the short term, he's okay, but don't leave him alone.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and we'll go back to New Paltz, and Paul is on. Paul, you're on.
Hello there.
Hello.
I have a 2012 Toyota Corolla. It has 125,000 miles on it, and my habit has been to keep it maintained and to have the right mechanics working on it to diagnose the whole situation on my car. And my question is about the cost of it and finding people who can work on my car. What is the average cost per hour of working on a car that you know about?
Well, okay, we don't do a lot of prices here, but you can certainly ballpark it because there is a book.
Yeah, well, so labor rates are kind of a strange factor because if you get to some of the high-end dealers, these labor rates are going to be extremely,
yeah,
extremely high. And trickle down to smaller mm-hmm. shops, they have less overhead. So if you're looking for a number, I don't know where to put it because I would say anywhere from $70 to $150 an hour.
Also depends on locale.
Locale, the neighborhood,
yeah,
the type of vehicles they service, the type of training they have. And an inexperienced shop at $70 an hour might take 4 hours to fix a problem that a guy that charges $90 an hour takes 1 hour to solve.
So,
I mean, you know,
it's
a hard formula.
All right, you want to follow up, Paul?
Yes, I just want to say that I'm in the car a lot, and a lot of folks live in their cars 4 hours a day, 3.5 hours a day, and so the car is an important thing, even like a living room or a bathroom or a bedroom,
yeah,
or a kitchen, because, and so maintaining them and finding the right people to do it is really an important task
True.
For all of us.
True.
Absolutely.
Although I wouldn't want to use your car as a bathroom. I think that's where I would draw the line. Paul, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. Dave in Voorheesville. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a puzzling issue with my power window on my driver's side. It's got a feature where you hit the button once and it goes all the way down. And it also, if you hit it once to bring it up, it'll go all the way up. I swapped my battery, put a new battery in, did it myself, and now it doesn't automatically go up all the way.
Yeah.
Huh.
Is this something you've ever heard of?
Yeah.
Is it something I did and I did it, do something wrong?
No, you didn't do anything wrong. When you disconnected the power from the vehicle, the windows, your auto up, auto down feature, if it's on one window or some cars have them on all four, has to be relearned. It forgot where to start and stop. And on most cars, what kind of car are we talking about here?
It's a 2009 Nissan Rogue.
Yeah, this is it's probably in your owner's manual, but most cars, okay, you do it this way. You put your finger on the button and raise the window all the way up and stay on the button even though the window stopped going. You're not going to blow it off the tracks. It's computerized. Stay on the button and I don't know what the time is on that car, but it doesn't hurt to go longer. So I would say stay on the button for 20 or 30 seconds.
Huh.
Then push the down button. Let the window go down to the bottom. Stay on the button, pushing it down, and give it another 30 seconds. Take your finger off the button. Wait a few seconds and see if that restored the auto feature. It probably will.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's all. It forgot the auto up and down.
That's great. So when all else fails, read the manual.
It could be. The procedure might be in your owner's manual. It probably is.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, Dave, thank you for the call. And over to Aaron in Amherst, Mass. Aaron, you're on.
Thanks for taking my my call. And yeah, I'm in the market for a work vehicle, and I was looking at the Chevy Astro van, and one in particular is a 2001. So I was just wondering if you had any things to look out for when shopping around for one of those vehicles.
Yeah, they were a pretty good vehicle. They haven't made them since, I'm not sure when they stopped. It was in the 2000s, I think.
Yeah, I think it was 2005.
Yeah, yeah, somewhere around there. They were a good basic vehicle. They were based on the S10 pickup pretty much as far as the suspension and engine and stuff goes. Some were available in all-wheel drive. Pretty rugged vehicle. Not anything to be overly concerned about.
It's pretty old, though.
It's old, so I'd be very concerned about getting under it and checking for rust.
Yeah. It's got 99,000 miles, it said, but yeah, I'll definitely take it to a shop and have them look under, put it up on the list.
Anything that age, you want to be concerned about corrosion issues going on under the vehicle.
Yeah.
But other than that, they were a tough vehicle.
All right.
Thanks, Aaron. We appreciate it. Used cars, in your experience, cost a lot more down south for, say, an 01, just because there's no salt issues and no corrosion?
I don't think the premium would be more bringing those cars up here.
Right.
Because down there, they don't have rust issues, so it's not even of concern.
So it's about the same market.
I think so. If you go look cars up in Kelley Blue Book or NADA, they do vary by region. There's regions where some cars are worth more than others. So absolutely does have some factor on that, yeah.
Gordon Fricke is our guest on Vox Pop today, and the number is 800-348-2551. Toffee in Burlington. Hello again, Toffee.
Hello. I have a 1974 Jeep, American Motors Jeep Cherokee station wagon that for the first time as the family car, mostly a summer car, first time she has not passed inspection.
Wow.
And because I took her to a different shop this year, and they found that after she was in an accident 15 years ago, they didn't rebuild her right. And now I need, I have the Jeep technical service manual for this vehicle because my husband was foresighted enough to buy that along with the car from the dealer in January of 75. And she's been ours ever since.
Wow.
And she does have some rust issues, so I would like to find some way of buying parts that meet the original technical manual, what the manual says is supposed to be her parts, because whoever rebuilt her was buying parts from somebody who had old Jeeps. He was just going out and pulling pieces off.
Junkyard sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder, is there any place you can get non-rusted things that will fit a 1974, which is 44 years old? She has only 42,000 miles on her. That's how we keep her.
Is this a Grand Wagoneer?
No.
The big one?
This is a Jeep Cherokee. This was before. This was built on the same line, on the same assembly line as the Wagoneer, but there's just enough difference because she's a two-door. She doesn't have all the fancy bells and whistles that the Wagoneer. She was the poor man's Wagoneer, is what my husband said. And so I need just basic part supplies because she doesn't even have a rack on the top, that kind of thing.
I don't know if part supplies for those vehicles are in much supply or not. I think what I would do is get on the internet and do some searching and see what's out there.
You happen to know somebody who makes things to these specifications?
I don't. I mean, it's too old to get them through a Jeep dealer.
Yeah.
Oh, I tried that.
Yeah. I think I would do some internet searching.
That's a great idea. In my experience, Toffee, with old electronics and things I like to toy around with.
There's no electronics
on the No. But my point is, with old things like that, and I like old stereos and stuff, there are always user groups. And so I'll bet you if you searched 1974 Jeep Cherokee, one of the links would be for this group of insane Cherokee owners from the 70s who have, and they'll be the ones who know, oh, yeah, you can get parts X, Y, and Z here.
Absolutely.
Would Hemmings Motor News have anything
I would certainly look in there, because their catalog is online and you can buy it, and there are trillions of parts suppliers in there.
Hey, good luck with that, but thank you for the call. And 1974 Jeep with 44,000 miles.
The reason I asked if it was a Grand Cherokee is they're kind of hot items. They're kind of a culty, retro, first of the big sport utilities, you know, like the Suburbans are now or the Tahoes. Yeah.
Mm, interesting. All right, let's go over to Nick in Oneida, New York. Nick, you're on.
All right, how are you guys?
Good.
So I am calling about a 2002 Audi that I have that makes this loud noise when I'm decelerating. You can kind of hear it at a constant when I'm, you know, cruising at a constant speed, but it gets louder when I decelerate, it seems. Or it might just be because I'm letting off the gas and I can hear it. But I just don't have any clue what it could be.
What end of the vehicle do you hear it from?
The front end.
So do you think it's from the engine area under the hood, or do you think it's out underneath the car where the wheels are?
It sounds like it's coming from the engine area.
Well, if you think it's engine-related, try to simulate the noise without driving it. Just speed the gas up to where your tach would be at highway speeds, 2,000 RPM, 2,200. See if you can reproduce the sound without the car being in motion. Then let up on the gas and see if you can reproduce that every time. It's not the drivetrain or transmission or axles or wheels. It's an engine sound. If you can't reproduce it and you've got to be on the highway, now the drivetrain comes into the picture and there's a lot of things moving and making potential sounds there. So without
I'm sorry to cut you off, have the timing. I had the timing belt serviced maybe 10,000 miles ago.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if it could be because something maybe got messed up a little bit when it was put back together.
Well, if that's the case, then you'll hear it without being in motion. You'll hear it with the engines speeding up and slowing down.
Okay.
That vintage, what is the model, A4? What year did you say it was?
2002.
An 02. At some point in those years, the timing belt tensioners were not automatic. They were manually tightened by the mechanic. And if you got the tension too tight, they would make a whining sound, but not just on decel. So I think you got to isolate where it's coming from and when it happens. It's going to be tough to pin that down.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, that kind of points me in one direction at least.
All right, Nick, thank you very much for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest today on Vox Pop. Eric in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Eric, you're on.
Hi, Gordon and Ray. I have a 2012 Outback with about 190,000 miles on it now. We bought it new in 2012, and about maybe 20,000 miles ago or so, the transmission melted down, and we had it replaced. Now, as a result of a kind of an extended warranty that Subaru was offering because their CRT transmissions were having some issues, we just got just under the wire and actually got it covered and didn't have to pay for this transmission swap with this new transmission that at that point had 170,000 on it.
That's phenomenal.
So now we've got this 190,000 mile car with a brand new transmission in it. It's been a good car aside from that overall, you know, over the years that we've had things done like the timing and, you know, different things like that. So my question is, given the state of the car, which is decent, with a new transmission at 190,000 miles, is this kind of a good time to maybe think about selling it? Or what do you think about, like, the prospective longevity of this car? We drive it pretty regularly. That's why the mileage is so high.
Yeah. The higher that mileage gets, the less desirable that car is going to be to anybody. You know, once you start getting over 200,000, a lot of people say, you know, it looks good, runs well, but it's got too many miles on it. So, if now it's not going to be worth any more than it is right now in terms of selling it or trading it. If you say, well, I'm not concerned about residual value, I just want a reliable car, and I don't care if we drive it right into the ground, I'm sure there's a lot more life left in the vehicle. And you said it was a 12?
Yeah, 2012.
Yeah, so the 12 Outback engine went to a timing chain instead of a belt, I believe. So,
I wonder about. I thought we had them go in at one point. There was sort of some major service. We probably spent like $3,000 where they did a bunch of different things. This was before the transmission issue, and I thought one of the items they addressed in there that they had said to us at the time, I can't remember, it was about, you know, a year ago, was the timing. But if it was a chain, maybe they wouldn't have done that. So.
Yeah, Subaru got away from belts on most of their cars by then, and I think the Outbacks did by 12. So you know, sooner or later, everything wears out. So you will experience trouble with other things at some point. So if you're at all on the fence of moving the car, this might be the time to do it, especially with that new transmission. That may be attractive to a new owner.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and the number is 800-348-2551. Diane in East Chatham is next. Hi, Diane.
Hey, hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a question about tires. You mentioned something that was interesting to me because I've never had winter tires and how much stress is placed on them by driving them in the summer. That seems to make sense. How about all-season tires?
Yeah, well, an all-season tire is pretty much the most routine and common tire on all cars today except performance vehicles. And they have what's considered a real true summer tire, which differs greatly in the design of the tread and traction and ability to handle cold weather. So all-season tires try to do as much as they can in one package. So they're quite good in all weather. They're quite good in handling. They're good in rain. They're okay in everything. If you drive a sports car in the summer and you want ultimate handling, you would put on real true performance summer tires. Those tires would be a disaster in the winter. If you put on the best, heaviest snow tires in the winter and drive them in the summer, they're bad in the summer. So that's why all seasons are on most cars as standard equipment.
Right. That makes sense to me. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure because I'm about to buy some new ones that are decent. They're Cooper CS5s, and they're supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah.
But it occurred to me that I had not realized this bit about summer being hard on tires, and I was assuming that all seasons would be an exception to that because they're all season.
Yeah. The tire you're choosing is a good tire. It'll work fine for you on that car.
Yeah, and I can't afford to buy multiple sets of tires. I just can't.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Diane, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Home stretch straight ahead.
Support comes from Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors. Serving the Northeast since 2001, stonesoupconcrete.com and on Facebook. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing seniors with transitional care and rehabilitation therapy as they move from hospital care to another level of care or home. DaughtersofSarah.org. And from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is on the other side of the table. He is here to answer your questions about cars and trucks. And Jason in Poughkeepsie is next on the line. Jason.
Hey, guys. I got a Mercedes C240. It's a 2002. It's got about 141,000 miles on it. And I noticed about a year ago, the light came on saying that my oil was low. So I'd put a quart of oil in it, it'd go away. Then maybe 6 weeks later, the light would come on again. I put another quart in it. So the other day, the oil was low. I put a quart in it. I drove to my new job interview. And right before I got there, the car died.
Ooh.
And then I started it back up. I made it there. And then I left. I got over a bridge. It died again. And then it died again, and now it's on my driveway. It starts up. I just got an oil change. Is my car going to die? Do I need a new head gasket? Any idea? What's the deal?
Yeah, so the oil consumption issue is quite common now. That car, yours is an 02, you said?
Correct.
Yeah. Newer cars are consuming oil. And normal rate nowadays, believe it or not, can be a quart to 500 miles, which is, you know, that's what they were doing in the 40s and 50s, maybe 60s. But your vintage car, they generally didn't use a lot of oil, but putting in a quart as often as you have indicates there could, you're seeing a leak? You're seeing any drips or puddles under the car when you park it?
You know, I don't even notice it, but actually somebody pointed it out to me once. They're like, yeah, dude, I think you got some oil leaking.
Yeah, and that's what's happening to your car probably. So if the oil light did not come on and the red warning didn't come on because you were critically low or out of oil, then I don't think you damaged the engine. The add oil light gives you plenty of warning. It tells you you need another quart, and that brings it back up to full. And your car might hold 4 to 5 quarts of oil, somewhere in that range. But if you let it go empty and the red light, the actual oil light comes on, the red one, and you drive even a minute with that light on, you could destroy the engine. So a shop's going to have to confirm that your engine's okay and then see what the oil leak's all about. The stalling, quitting is probably another issue.
Separate?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Unless you ran it out of oil, then you got major problems. Yeah.
No, I don't think so, because I put the quart of oil in, and you know, as soon as that light came back on, the thing about it, it started back up.
Yep.
Several times.
And this is a yellow. This light is yellow, correct? That tells you to add the oil.
No, on my car, it's red lettering.
And what does it tell you?
It shows a picture of your engine. It says engine oil low.
Okay, yeah, that's okay. Yep. Usually the car makers make it green, yellow, and red like your traffic signal. Green, you're fine. Yellow is caution. Red, you're in trouble.
Huh.
So just heed those lights and get it checked out. It may be okay.
Jason, thanks for the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Adam in East Nassau. Adam, you're on.
Hi, I'll give you a famous what would you do? Original owner, Ford F-150, 2003, 7700 series, 55,000 miles on it, but it is rusting away, and I need a catalytic converter, both sides, the entire Y-pipe. What would you do?
All right. Your connection is pretty bad, Adam, but we got the point.
Yeah. So is that catalytic converter rusting and roaring loud, or is it turning on the check engine light for a cat code? What's the issue with it?
The cat code is on. There's holes in both sides of the catalytics.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to be, is that a 5.4 liter, which I think it probably is?
Yes, it is a 5.4.
Yeah. So be very careful on leaks in front of the Y-pipe from the manifolds, the manifold gaskets, and the manifold studs, because it was a epidemic on that series truck. So
yeah, the both manifolds are brand new.
They are. That's been done?
That's been done.
Okay. If that's out of the way, that's phenomenal, because that's a horrible job. Now to the cat, if the truck is still good and it's got some use left in it, replace the converter, but it's expensive. And in the state of New York, if that truck has California emissions, which it may or may not, there's two levels of converter, the high-end converter, which is big money, or the 48-state converter, which is large money, but not big money. So I would look into getting it fixed then, unless you find that that estimates giant money on that converter.
And they're expensive because of the rare metals?
The rare metals and the fact that New York has adopted California emissions on vehicles sold in New York State that are California compliant.
Ah.
So there's a little bit of fine print there to read.
Yeah, sounds like collusion.
Yeah.
Bill and Troy. Bill, you're on.
Yes, I wanted to make a quick question. And first, thank you for the good show.
Thank you.
I wanted to inquire, is there any detrimental things to using Lucas Oil Stabilizer? Have you, in your experience?
No, it's nice stuff. It does have a purpose. Don't overdo it because it's really thick. But it has its uses. This Lucas stuff came out of racing, and they were using, they made racing oil and additives, and it's a little slipperier. It coats your internal parts. It slows oil consumption down. So it does have a function. It's not going to rebuild your engine.
Right.
But it's not harmful as long as you don't overdo the amount you put in.
So follow the instructions.
Yeah.
All right, Bill, thank you very much for the call. And over to Fred in Coxsackie. Fred.
Hello.
Hello.
Gordon, thank you very much for coming on.
Sure.
I've got a phantom electrical drain in my 2004 Toyota Tacoma. It's got the six-cylinder engine.
Yep.
It was one of those that got the frame replaced and the lines, so that, you know, that part's all new.
Yeah.
And if I don't drive it for 10 days, 2 weeks, it drains the battery to the point where it won't start. I know this can be, you know, any one of many things,
yeah,
but is there a way to proceed in trying to troubleshoot that?
Yeah. You want to do it yourself? Try it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So here's what you do. First of all, you have to confirm that the battery is 100% good.
Well, it's a fairly new Interstate battery.
Yeah.
Less than a year old.
Yeah. That battery wants to be fully charged and tested if you can, or get it tested to be sure the battery is 100% good. Because if you've got a marginal battery and a vehicle sits 2 to 3 weeks, you could have a hard starting problem and be no current draw issues at all. But let's assume the battery's good.
That's why I changed it.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it is.
Sure. So what you can do is, if you have a 12-volt test light,
yep,
you would take the negative battery terminal, and you're going to put the test light in series with it.
Okay.
But you can't disconnect the battery and then hook the test light up. You have to get it connected and bridge it and then pull the terminal away from the battery. So the test light is reading any residual draw in the car. So let's say the light bulb is lit on the test light after you've done that. The first step is to pull one fuse at a time. Hopefully the light goes out on one of those fuses. That tells you the circuit that's in trouble, and then you search out what it is. Headlights, taillights, glove box light, radio, whatever. But it's a process that takes diligence, time, and a lot of hair can be pulled out on trying to trace down a current draw.
And find all the fuses.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got more than one fuse box in most vehicles today.
Right.
So yeah, it can be nerve-wracking.
I can use a meter as well, right?
You can also use a meter
like
set to milliamps or automatic amp setting, but you have to make sure that you don't bridge that connection with the meter or the test light until you unhook it. In other words, the battery has to stay connected with your meter on it, or you're going to get a wrong reading.
Okay.
So the meter is continuous from the wire to the terminal on the battery.
Yeah, you're going to put it in series.
Okay.
All right, Fred, thank you very much for the call. Sandra in Greenfield. Sandra, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm interested in purchasing a work truck, and I just went to a customer's house, and he has a 2012 Ford F-150 with 92,000 miles on it, and I took it for a ride, and it was really hard to steer. He said, and pardon my ignorance, I don't know trucks. He said that the joints needed replacing, and I just need to know what that entails. Is that, am I looking, if I were to purchase this, am I looking straight off the bat, you know, $5,000 to fix this?
No.
Is it an easy fix?
Yeah, so it's very common, particularly on vehicles that sit around a lot. And let's say this truck was out of service. He's been trying to sell it for 5 months, and it's been sitting. There is a universal joint in the steering shaft, connects the steering wheel to the steering mechanism, and it makes that shaft turn a corner. So there's universal joints in there. Those joints will rust and stick and freeze up, and you'll find that it steers normally, and then it hits a really hard spot, then it's okay again, then it hits another hard spot, and that's every time that joint comes around. And we've replaced bunches of those on F-150s. So that's not a killer. That's not a massive job. That's not $5,000. That's, depending on where you buy the part, you're probably into the $200 to $300 to $400 range, again, where you get the part.
All right.
But that won't kill the vehicle. That's not uncommon.
Okay.
Okay. And he did mention that it sits around a lot. He vacations, and so it just kind of sits in his driveway for months.
Yeah, that's what happens.
And then, okay, well, then I feel a lot better about that. And then I, obviously in New York, things rust, particularly trucks. And so the back corner is just before the box on both sides are very, very rusted.
Yep.
He said that there was a kit through Ford to be able to fix those.
Yeah, but that's no easy kit. That's cutting out and putting new corners in. So you want to be looking under that vehicle more carefully, because when you see the rust under those cab corners and your steering shaft is binding, you may have a lot of rust under there that's not visible unless somebody really gets under that vehicle and looks it over. So I'd be concerned of more rust under there than you may want to deal with.
Okay.
Okay.
Sandra, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Tracy in Rotterdam. Tracy, you're on.
Hi. I wanted your opinion on, I'm looking at purchasing a 2006 Porsche Boxster base. It's got a hard and a soft top. And it's for 106,000 miles. That's what I'm concerned about. How many miles are these cars usually good for?
Very durable. Yeah, that's an 06 car. So that's not high mileage at all. And if that vehicle was properly maintained in its previous life, which it usually Porsches are.
Yeah.
Even though that's the lesser priced.
It's still a nice car.
It's still a nice car.
Yeah.
And that's not a mileage that I would be concerned about on that car.
Okay, thank you very much for your opinion.
Sure.
Thanks a lot. Well, you know, it's just an opinion now. not legally binding in any way. All right, let's go over to Joy in Schenectady. Joy, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Quick question. I know someone had called earlier about driver's side window. I also have a quick question about driver's side window. I have a 2013 Kia Soul.
Okay.
I was having a problem with the window, not working properly. Had taken it to the dealer. They said one time it was off the track. One time they kind of lubed it. Long story short, it came off the track again. I took it in. They put in a new motor. They said the window was broken, and I ended up paying for a new window. It is now not working because they say that there's a problem with the track, and they're telling me to take it to a body shop to fix the track.
Yeah. What year is that?
It's a 2013.
Yeah.
Yikes.
The mechanism that winds the window up and down is called a window regulator, and in a lot of cases, you can buy the regulator motor assembly together. So all the tracks and all the moving parts get changed together.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's the best way to do it. I don't know how Kia packages these and sells them, but I don't understand why it needs to go to the body shop unless there was damage to the door and something is tweaked, bent, or really out of whack. Was the car in a crash?
They did ask us if the car had ever been in an accident. It's never been in an accident. And they said that there was a part in the door that was not original to the car, but we're the only owners. We bought it from this dealership.
Huh.
The only thing that we can think of is maybe like when it was being transported before we purchased it.
Something may have occurred. It's possible. It's not that likely that it would have been that catastrophic. And transit damage, when it reaches a certain amount, has to be reported and documented. So I doubt that.
Mm-hmm.
And did you say they had the window ended up getting broken? The glass itself?
Correct.
I've already paid for a new when
it was at their shop.
Yeah.
And you had to pay for the glass that they broke. Amazing.
They said it was broken when I brought it in, but
interesting. Well, okay.
I don't think so. But anyways, long story short, I paid for a new motor, I paid for a new window, and it's still not working because they said that the regulator or the track or whatever the window is riding up and down is probably bent, and they told me to take it to a body shop.
I would recommend a second opinion.
Okay.
And maybe a regulator assembly might solve the problem. Somebody else has got to get their eyes in there because I don't think they are able to correct your problem.
Okay, Joy, thanks a lot. We only have about a half a minute here. Very quickly, Nancy in Ellington, Connecticut, only because I like Ellington, I'm going to give you 15 seconds with Gordon Fricke, and then we have to go.
Okay, I have a 2009 Toyota Camry sedan, and the locks have malfunctioned. Only the driver's side opens with the key. Is this a home fix, or should I bring it to the shop?
Power locks?
Yep.
Yeah, I would make sure every door latch is lubed nicely with a penetrating oil, like a WD-40, and exercise mm-hmm. them all up, and then see if you can get them to work with your buttons or your remote, and then it's time for a shop.
You know what, Nancy? You put that so quickly.
Usually, did a good job.
Usually when I ask a caller at the end, I say, you got 15 seconds, they give me a three-minute preamble.
Yeah.
That was perfect.
She knew what to do.
Gordon Fricke, well done, sir. Support comes from Patricia Dalton Fennell and Albany Health Management Associates. For over 30 years, bridging the arts, science, and service, working globally and locally, albanyhealthmanagement.com. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Painter Edith Hunsberger, exhibiting watercolor and acrylic paintings at Paradise City in Northampton, Massachusetts. Memorial Day weekend, booth number 935, edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Nine Pin Cider, Albany. Hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room featuring New York cider, beer, wine, spirits, open Tuesday through Sunday. Now available in Massachusetts and Connecticut. Ninepincider.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting its 6th annual Lake George Hikeathon July 5th, a one-day event with 19 hikes and paddles. Register online at lakegeorgehikeathon.org. Thanks to Gordon Fricke, Zach Malloy, Deb Malik, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we grill on Food Friday. Stand by now for news.